Good morning. You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks. Sea level rise is a growing concern as climate change continues to escalate and quickly. There are some places in the country, like Florida, that can expect to have parts of that state underwater in little more than a decade. But what about the Bay Area, and specifically Oakland? Do we have anything to worry about? Joining me to discuss is Colin Miller, a coordinator with the Oakland Climate Action Coalition. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Kat.
Thank you so much for joining us. Tell me a little bit about the Oakland Climate Action Coalition.
So we are a coalition of organizations that believe in and are fighting for racial, economic, environmental, gender, and climate justice. And we were formed, first convened by the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights back in 2009 when we first found out that the city of Oakland was going to be doing an energy and climate action plan through 2020. And so the Ella Baker Center said to their friends and allies at that time, do we want to just go through a standard planning process where the city provides the plan that's nearly fully baked, a 90-day comment period, and then gives us time to respond to the plan once it's already written? And folks overwhelmingly said, no, we want a people's plan. We want to write a plan that actually benefits people who are most impacted by the climate crisis, who are most impacted by poverty and pollution. And that looks like Black and brown folks in Oakland who are also most impacted by the crisis of displacement and gentrification and by the prison industrial complex. And so folks said, we need to create green jobs, not jails. And that became the founding slogan of the Oakland Climate Action Coalition. We continue that same work today and fight for community resilience and equity and justice.
So that's the Van Jones days.
Yes? That's right. Back in those days. Yes.
Okay. So I want to start with the basics. What is sea level rise?
So sea level rise is a process by which the amount of water that's actually in the oceans around the world is rising as a result of the melting ice caps and glaciers, as a result of climate change, which is actually putting more moisture into the atmosphere. And as a result of the melting ice caps, that's actually accelerating the process of sea level rise, because as there's less white space for the sun to reflect back to, there's more dark ocean that actually warms the ocean around those polar ice caps even further. And so we get unfortunately a positive feedback cycle. It's negative in nature in that it's increasing the sea levels, but scientists year after year have been coming back to us with alarming, frightening results, saying this is happening much, much faster than we had previously understood. And the United Nations official scientific consensus, it's about 10 years old, because they draw on scientific reports from so many different sources and countries, and it's actually quite conservative. And so the real extent of sea level rise is somewhat debatable, and there's different sources you could go to, but I feel confident in saying that we should be prepared for worse than the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's current predictions on sea level rise.
So not too long ago, someone I was working with on a project said, hey, you know, your house is going to be underwater in like 30 years. And I was like, what are you talking about? I live in West Oakland. That's not possible. And they were like, no, there's a map and you should check it out. So we have cause for concern here in Oakland.
We sure do. And there's a number of really excellent public reports that are available from the City of Oakland's preliminary sea level rise roadmap, which is not a binding policy document. It's really more of a framework from which policies can be adopted. There's the Adapting to Rising Tides Project, and one of my favorites is the Pacific Institute's Adapting to Climate Change in Oakland report. And that Pacific Institute has done some really excellent community-based mapping and community-based research with West Oakland Environmental Indicators Project over the years, really grounding some of that research in people's lived experience, West Oakland, you know, natives. Yes, we have cause for concern in terms of sea level rise in West Oakland, in East Oakland, in Fruitvale, in Chinatown, and all the flatlands neighborhoods in Oakland.
Paint a picture. What is the concern? What will it look like?
Yeah, so if folks have seen, you know, what it looked like in East San Jose in 2017 when it flooded there, if people remember seeing what it looked like during Hurricane Katrina, what it looked like during Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Harvey, what we're talking about is not only just the sea level rise, which is sort of an incremental thing, year upon year, rising inch by inch. There's also the possibility of coinciding with a 100-year flood event, a storm surge, and a king tide. So when all of these natural events coincide, which doesn't happen very often, but with climate change, a 500-year flood can become a 100-year flood, could become a 50-year flood. The frequency of intense weather events becomes more and more frequent. That's sort of the nature of climate change as we're seeing it.
What's a king tide?
So a king tide is the highest tide. If you look at the tidal chart, it's related to the cycles of the moon, is basically when the high tide is at its highest. So if you combine that with a storm surge, with a lot of precipitation, as we got this past winter, kind of making up for many decades of drought or many years of drought, then you also see the possibility of sea level rise combining with the water that's actually being pushed up on the dry surface of the land by the rising salt water. And so there's possibility of flooding in our backyards from that. And people in East Oakland, I'm not sure if you're experiencing this, Kat, today, but some people's basements are already getting flooded today. And some people's toilets are already backing up today because the salt water and where it intersects with the groundwater that's below our feet in the aquifers is actually being pushed up. There was a recent tree planting event for MLK Day in January that Higher Ground did at Brookfield Elementary. And they were digging holes for planting the trees. And there was water within a foot of where they were digging the holes for those fruit trees. And that's that not salty water, that fresh water that's being pushed up by the salt water. So we're actually seeing the real possibility of flooding in our homes right now, people's toilets backing up and things like that.
Wow. Okay, so we talked about king tide. I went through, there is a 2017 City of Oakland report. And that report lists a few different scenarios. One was the enhanced king tide flooding. The other was temporary coastal flooding from extreme tides. Now, what's an extreme tide versus a king tide?
I'm not sure of exactly the difference between an extreme tide and a king tide. So I can't break down the science. But I can say that whether it's an extreme tide or a king tide with a storm surge, with sea level rise, all of these different confluence of factors, we're also dealing with toxins underground. From gas stations, from EPA cleanup sites that were never properly cleaned up. And, you know, people's homes are being built on top of gas stations right now across Oakland and former toxic sites. And there's some mitigation or remediation, but there's a lot of sites that are leaking toxins into the soil. And in the event of a flood, we're dealing with a toxic soup, which could give people cancer and other forms of illness. So there's a lot of different health concerns beyond just displacement from flooding in low-lying areas.
You know, I tried to get flood insurance on my home a few years ago. I bought my home in 2009 and I think like 2010 or something. I tried to get flood insurance and they're like, no, you don't need it. Yeah, they wouldn't sell it to me. So it'd be interesting to call back and have that conversation today. Is that something that homeowners should be thinking about like now?
That's a very good question. I would say yes, absolutely. I mean, the folks who live in Brooklyn Basin or who are just moving into the new developments in Brooklyn Basin, in the flatlands of West Oakland, in the flatlands of East Oakland, I would say should definitely be looking into flood insurance. And I wonder why these flood insurance companies are not wanting to sell you or telling you you don't
need it.
Right. Why is that? Because they understand climate change better than almost anyone. They are studying climate change very intensely because of the nature of climate disasters and how people are then collecting on their insurance. I mean, California is still reeling from the wildfires that just happened, and sea level rise is just the other elemental dimension or impact of climate change in California.
So we talked about the flatlands being the most vulnerable, of course, because the hills are protected by being in the hills. So that means that folks that are already struggling, resource-stripped neighborhoods, folks that, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, our most vulnerable community members are going to be the hardest hit by these things.
Yeah, the same people who are already most impacted by poverty, by pollution, by policing, and by prisons are the same folks who are most impacted by climate change. And there's been a narrative in a lot of ways, in a lot of circles, that fighting climate change is about saving the polar bears and about getting Priuses or getting electric vehicles. And that's it's important. And polar bears are important. I value them as much as any species that's really threatened with extinction. But I'm really most concerned with people, and especially people who are already on the front lines of so many social inequities and the ways in which people of color, low-income people, people with disabilities, youth, seniors, queer folks, migrants, refugees, people without papers, formerly incarcerated folks are all people who are most vulnerable to and most impacted by the climate crisis and who are least responsible for causing the climate crisis. Mm. And to me, that is the fundamental understanding that we need to be in common understanding as a community about, that that's climate injustice. And I think, you know, it's really important to acknowledge that California state law around climate investment actually talks about the importance of protecting people from displacement and ensuring that benefits flow first to people who are most impacted. There's this tool called the California EnviroScreen 3.0, really amazing mapping tool. Anyone can go online and check it out and see what color your neighborhood is. Mm. It's by census tract. And you can look at the map of Oakland, California, and the same neighborhoods that were redlined in the early part of the 20th century are the same neighborhoods that continue to experience the worst air quality and socioeconomic indicators in the state in terms of economic inequality.
There's a lot of new construction happening in Oakland. We see cranes everywhere, traffic at a standstill on most of our streets. Are these new developments being built with sea level rise in mind?
That's a very good question, and I think it's something we should all be asking ourselves and asking the city of Oakland. The folks who are working on what's called the Healthy Development Guidelines, some of those organizations are part of the Oakland Climate Action Coalition, and others are our allies and close friends of our coalition. And they have been fighting for a set of guidelines for new developments to ensure that those developments are actually healthy for people who live there. And I think, I don't know if those Healthy Development Guidelines includes measures around protection from sea level rise or mitigating adapting to sea level rise, but I would say they certainly should be. And I'm familiar with several housing developments that are likely market rate that are being built on former gas stations here in West Oakland. I think it's really important for us not to only consider like adapting to sea level rise as it's coming through our housing, but also how we work with water. Oakland is a hardscape. The landscape is very hard in terms of like a lot of concrete and asphalt. And historically, a lot of West Oakland and East Oakland and, you know, a lot of our communities were wetlands, were marshlands. And in a way, this is Mother Nature coming to take back what was hers before. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's coming to impact communities who have had nothing to do with the causing the crisis in the first place.
Right. We're talking about low-income neighborhoods being impacted, and we're still including West Oakland in that. But that is changing and changing rapidly. So the bottoms in West Oakland, historically one of the poorest neighborhoods in our city, and historically one of the neighborhoods that had some of the highest levels of toxicity, right? You didn't want to live in the bottoms because your chances of cancer were exponentially increased, is rapidly becoming a million-dollar neighborhood. So you're seeing on Peralta and 10th, you know, $1.2 million duplexes, on Wood Street, $1.5 million homes. And I mean, it's just what we're anticipating is that as these tech companies set to go public, we're going to have an influx of millionaires. There's no more room in San Francisco. They're going to move into West Oakland. This is going to be a multi-million dollar neighborhood. Are they buying into disaster?
That's a really good question, and I think that they should be mindful of that. There's a good chance that they are. I don't want to scare people, but you just have to look at the science, and you just have to look at what's been going on and what's being projected by a global consensus of scientists. Unfortunately, yes, I would say they are buying into disaster. And so in the shorter term, I don't want to leave sea level rise out of the conversation because it's so vital. But for a lot of people, this is a whole new conversation. It's stretching people's thinking, given people are facing, like you said, paying rent next month or putting food on the table for their children. And how can adapting to sea level rise in an equitable manner by building our resilience to it, by restoring wetlands and planting trees and removing concrete and giving places for the water to go, how can that actually put people to work and create good green jobs that are union wage and union standard, or perhaps worker cooperatives where Black families and communities of color are actually creating wealth where there's an incredible wealth gap, you know, such that, you know, those wealthy people are coming in, are not buying into disaster, and also such that people who are there in West Oakland now, who are longtime historic residents, have a right to stay.
That's right.
How do we decommodify the housing market and create tenant protections such that people have a right to stay as the neighborhood gets greener and cleaner and, you know, seeks to address and mitigate sea level rise? So these are some of the questions that we're asking at the Oakland Climate Action Coalition.
What is the city doing, if anything, to deal with impending sea level rise?
So there are two primary avenues that the city of Oakland is dealing with. One is the city has a new, relatively new, resilience department. They hired a chief resilience officer. Oakland Climate Action Coalition was actually worked with the city to write this grant to the Rockefeller Foundation's 100 Resilient Cities program. And that was funded by Rockefeller for several years. And then the city decided to actually set aside some funding for this staff position, the chief resilience officer, who is currently Alex McBride. And then there's the City of Oakland's sustainability group, which is under the Environmental Services Division at the Public Works Department, is doing this Energy and Climate Action Plan through 2030. We have formed a neighborhood leadership cohort of diverse Oakland residents who are the heart of our community engagement effort, predominantly Black and Brown folks who are leading an effort to engage. What do Oakland residents believe and feel needs to be done to address climate action in a way that creates benefits for most impacted residents and frontline residents and that minimizes harm for frontline most impacted residents? So the city's goals are to reduce emissions by 56% below 2005 levels by 2030 and to do so in a way that creates community benefits. And Oakland is the first city in the country that we know of that's actually doing climate action planning with an equity lens. So it's very exciting. And if we do it right here, we can actually inspire a lot of other cities and communities around the country to do the same. So I think that's a really powerful opportunity for us to come together. And I think there may be ways for Oakland residents who have more means to help to pay for some of the changes and some of the improvements and some of the actions that need to be taken to improve the quality of life and the safety for everyone for present and future generations.
You're listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. I've been in conversation with Colin Miller, a coordinator with the Oakland Climate Action Coalition, and we've been discussing sea level rise in Oakland. Colin, if folks want to learn more about the Oakland Climate Action Coalition or how they get involved, where do they go?
They can go to www.oaklandclimateaction.org. And we'll be sharing more information with you, Kat, about our community portal for the Climate Action Plan 2030. And the City of Oakland has a climate portal, which we'll share the link to as well.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.